Good morning. You are watching the program with Ted Rollin, Jamarl Thomas. It is Monday, April 27th, 2026. Good morning, JT.
What's going on, man? How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, slow news weekend. Nothing much going on.
Really?
So another assassination attempt against President Trump. Cole T. Allen, 31 years old, from Torrance, California, is accused of attempting to assassinate President Trump. And he seems to be fitting sort of a new profile for American presidential would-be assassins or assassins like Luigi Mangione, alleged assassins, well-educated, from good families, you know, and very intelligent, very articulate, not crazy and wild. We'll be getting into the assassination attempt at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, as well as all the political ramifications of that. King Charles III and Queen Camilla of the UK are visiting Washington, D.C. today. There had been talk of canceling that visit due to, or delaying it due to what happened on Saturday night, but that is not going to happen. And in Israel, two minor parties are coming together. They're merging forces in an effort to try to get rid of Benjamin Netanyahu in the next election. So a lot going on. I think we should obviously dive right into the White House Correspondent Dinner.
Yes, I'm eager to discuss that with you.
Please go ahead.
No, I'm curious on your take. I mean, I'll give you my take, but I'm curious on yours.
First of all, because we air on the internet, on YouTube and Rumble, I suppose we should address the fact that one of the most searched for terms on Sunday was faked, staged, etc.
Yes.
People who are, you know, convinced that this is not really, like, you know, whatever this is. I mean, look, we have no reason to believe that. This probably is. I mean, usually most things are exactly what they look like. Not everything. I definitely don't want to say that. I don't want to be naive. But most things are exactly what they look like. And this looks like a case of a guy who was disgusted by President Trump and his policies.
Yes.
He fits the profile in many ways. He's young. He's a single guy. He's not a parent. He's not married. And he was very upset about the assassination of Venezuelan fishermen, about the genocide in Gaza. And, you know, I thought his alleged manifesto that he posted online, one thing that really jumped out to me was basically no one else is going to take care of this. You know, and I thought that was super worth exploring here. Obviously, we have to be super careful about the way that we talk about this.
Yes.
But you know, what's going on with President Trump? I think a lot of people who love what he's doing, obviously, are not going to at all connect to what I'm about to say. But for people who view him as a failure of the system, you know, someone whose manner, whose policies, whose approach to governance is really outside of the norm, they're going to view him and the fact that he's still president as a failure of the of the system. It's a failure of the Democratic Party to run a viable candidate against him in 2024 or in 2016. It's a failure of the Constitution in terms of not providing a viable path for, you know, we have a political means of removal in the form of impeachment. But basically, if the party in power in the House of Representatives is the same as the party as the president, it's almost impossible that the president would ever be impeached, even if he got caught dog fucking. In fact, I asked Trumpies on my Twitter feed if one of them, if he was caught dog fucking, would they be in favor of removing him? Not one person would say yes, right? So that is, I mean, that's where we're at. And then there's the failure of the 25th Amendment, which is right. needs to be invoked by the vice president. And you can see why it never has been, because the person who invokes it then benefits from it by becoming president. And it would be viewed as extremely self-serving. It's a fair, I mean, it's a ridiculous mechanism. So you have a system that fails us. You know, I mean, you have a president who is out of control and reckless in many ways, I would argue is mentally unsound and certainly temperamentally unfit to be president. That part, I think, is clear and should be impeached, should have been impeached over emoluments 1,000 times over, but certainly should be impeached over these wars of choice, that particularly the one against Iran, but not only. So, I mean, he's a terrible person. He's a terrible president. And he should be removed. That's not to say that I think we would have been better off necessarily under President Harris, but this is where we are. And I think it's the only thing surprising about what happened on Saturday night to me is that it doesn't happen more often.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you said a few things. For one, I suppose that the Trumpers, MAGA supporters, fake MAGA supporters. And I'm saying this because real MAGA supporters would be like the Marjorie Taylor Greens and Tucker Carlson's that actually care about America first, right? But they would probably say, well, the dog was asking for it. I mean, that dog might have been putting off signals that Trump couldn't resist, right? So who knows? From the standpoint of the thing that took place at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I'm conflicted. And I'm not conflicted about whether they should murder the president. It's not that. I'm conflicted about this idea of what do you do? I've mentioned this point before. If I was a German citizen in World War II that thought my government was full of maniacs and lunatics, and psychopaths, what do I, as a German citizen, do? And the irony of it is, in his document, in the manifesto that he put out, one of the things he put out, as you point out, what am I to do? I'm a Christian. I believe in, it's not that I turn the other cheek. I turn the other cheek if I'm being oppressed. I'm not being oppressed. He explicitly put it out. I'm not being oppressed. It's other people that are being attacked by this lunatic maniac government. And whether that's the murdering of fishermen, whether that's the genocide in Gaza, whether that's this war of aggression, all of these things bespeak of an empire gone insane. Mm-hmm. What am I to do? Right. That's this point. What am I to do? What is people to do? Nobody else is picking up the ball. So this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to try to kill from the top down. I think you call them pedophiles, rapists, and something else.
Traitor.
Yeah. Look, he's right in that sense. The catch is, what do you do about it?
Right.
And is it productive to go and try to murder the president of the United States? He's even right about the Christian thing. Because he's
he
like,
is right.
It's like, look, man, as a Christian, what am I supposed to do with this? You're using my tax dollars and you're murdering people abroad in my name. You're backing rapists. Israel, I don't know if you remember this. They raped a man. They gang raped the guy, the Israeli military. And when it went to Channel 4 for them to talk about it and discuss it and do a poll in the population about whether they're okay with it, 60% of the public says, fair game. That's who we're backing. And so if you are a person of conscience, what do you
do? If you're a pedophile in the United States and you're an Israeli national, the Israelis will welcome you back and not extradite you to the United States.
Yes. So what do you do? And he came to the conclusion, I need to kill the top of the ticket. What he misses in that, though, is it's not just Trump, meaning this is U.S. policy. They act like Trump, yes, his manner is more grotesque. True. But Joe Biden had no issue getting us involved in the Ukraine war, like pushing NATO to the borders of Russia and everything else. Hundreds of thousands of people.
Gaza genocide was mostly under his watch.
Under Joe Biden. So it's like, I get it that Joe Biden is cancer and he's that long for this world. But if you're going to whack somebody, it's not just Trump that you're going after. I guess my point is, it's an indictment of the system itself. It's not about any particular political party. Both are run by psychopaths. Trump may be the fullest expression of that psychopathy, but all of these people are sociopaths. So I understand where he's coming from. I am sympathetic to what he wants, right? I just don't know how you get it. And killing Trump doesn't get you there.
No, I mean, let's face it. What would happen? What would have happened if today we were talking about when the president was going to lay in state and his funeral was going to be? What would happen is that, of course, J.D. Vance would be the president of the United States. MAGA World would be going absolutely insane and saying that, like, there needs to be retribution against the left. This would create more of a, sort of a Reichstag fire moment. For people who, used to compare the Reichstag fire, 9/11 to the Reichstag fire, let's be clear. Okay, the Dutch anarchist, he really did do it. He did set the Reichstag on fire. That guy was guilty. And what happened is that the Nazi regime used it as an excuse, right, as a predicate to crack down and finalize the clampdown against what remained of the Weimar Constitution. That we would have that kind of moment here, right, where you could, J.D. Vance could say, well, I'm not sure, I'm not really sure if we should have midterm elections given the, heightened thing. The thing is, there is no legitimate outlet for taking care of what needs to be taken care of under the existing system, as previously mentioned. And there's no left wing organization for a guy like Cole T. Allen to join and say, like, we're going to agitate for real change, meaningful change. He went to a No Kings rally, apparently. I'm sure he saw what a fucking waste of time that was. He donated to Kamala Harris. He saw what a waste of time that was, or waste of money. The truth is, under this system, there is no way out. I mean, only this is why I advocate revolution. I think that the state needs to be overthrown. I think we need to start from scratch as Americans. I'm not saying, I have my ideas of how things should be done, but that's neither here nor there, right? Like, I think as Americans, we need to tear the whole thing down from scratch and start with a brand new system, new constitutional convention, and hash this whole thing out as Americans and figure out how to, a better, newer, more contemporary way to live, because this system has no outlet. And to me, what happened Saturday is a reminder of that.
Violent country produces violent people. What's ironic about this is that...
And did you see Trump's Truth Social that he put out late that night?
Yeah.
We must all live in peace. There's no space for political violence, says the man who's authorizing drone strikes, says the man who currently has not only the president of Venezuela, but the first lady of Venezuela sitting in a prison right now for no discernible reason, who assassinated the supreme leader, head of state of Iran, and always brags about killing the equivalent of Colin Powell, Soleimani back in 2020. Political violence, it's like the commercial. You're soaking in it, Mr. President. Well,
that's why I didn't have any feelings about this. I saw this and was like, interesting. And
I'm just going to come out and say it. Back in 1981, when John Hinckley shot Ronald Reagan in front of the very same hotel, the Washington Hilton, I was... Just to be clear here, I hated Ronald Reagan with a purple passion. I protested him. I was really upset when he won, not once, but twice. I think Ronald Reagan, to this day, I think he was a scoundrel of the first order. He destroyed the social safety net. He destroyed the idea of America as a communitarian society where we all help each other. I hated him. When he was shot, I was shocked and dismayed. And I thought, this is not the way we're supposed to do things. Now, I don't know if that's because I was 18, and now at 62, I'm grizzled and hardened, but I don't think that's it. I think that I have to admit, if Donald Trump had been shot on Saturday, I would not have given two shits. I would not have thought that I would have found it interesting. I would not have found it sad. I wouldn't have been happy about it, but it would have been to me like, driving down the road and seeing a dead opossum. huh, dead opossum. I don't care. You know, yeah. I just don't want the possum blood on my car. That's it. Yeah. And I don't think, and there's something very, very wrong when an American citizen feels that way, or maybe doesn't have feelings about this. And, we, you know, we're supposed to pretend to be sad about this or care about this, but at least half the country doesn't.
Yeah. What's the point of being, look, how am I, as a human being with a certain sense of integrity and try to be honest, come out and say that the man has been murdering people abroad, as you point out, whether it's drone strikes, whether it's a war of aggression in Iran, they killed thousands in Iran in a war of aggression that never needed to take place that Donald Trump launched. The genocide in Gaza that he kept going after claiming that he was bringing it into it. The ceasefire that he's claiming exists that doesn't exist. And as you point out, Maduro sitting in the prison. And that doesn't even touch Soleimani. That doesn't even touch sanctions on various countries in order to try to make those economies scream, like Cuba being put into the dark. We have no idea how many people were injured or killed. What about people on dialysis in Cuba that no longer have lights to get treatment? Like, this is the stuff that we're talking about, right? You can say
healthcare, refusing to do anything about healthcare. Americans literally die every day because
President Trump refuses to address healthcare security because we have wars to fight and we need to increase the defense budget by $1.5 trillion. So somebody takes a pot shot at a psychopath. Why do I care about the psychopath? Why? Like, I'm just being honest. He is a guy. He is a guy doing horrible things around the world. And I'm supposed to feel concerned. Yes, there is something wrong with that. And I'm saying that's not a factor of us. That is a factor of the environment that is creating this point of view in us. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the ballroom. Trump came out and was like, hey, man, this is why we need a ballroom, because the president isn't safe. The irony of it is,
it would never have been there.
They didn't even have metal detectors.
Yeah, as Cole Allen mentioned in his manifesto. I thought, you know, the hypocrisy, the self-serving, the self-dealing of all this, like, you know, you're literally messaging the ballroom after, you know, someone was coming out to kill you. That's your takeaway. That's your shtick. I mean, what's fake is the response to the whole thing that, like, and, you know, look, you know who's guilty of all this too? Both political parties, the system. The media has all normalized violence, like they ultra violence, as they would say in Clockwork Orange. It's kind of baffling. They'll say things like, like a mainstream organization like the New York Times will say, like, Trump took out Soleimani. No, he didn't date him. He didn't take him out for wine. He blew him up. He murdered him and blew him into bits of protoplasm is what he did to him. Killed, assassinated, bombed, all works for me. But the point is, this reminds me of, did you ever see the Chinese movie Hero that came out?
Yes.
It was so
Jet Li.
Yeah, Jet Li. Good movie. Oh, great movie, actually. I've seen it many times. It was kind of the China's answer to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which was Taiwanese. Anyway, so it's about the first emperor of China, right? He spends his entire career as a warlord during the Warring States period, murdering, assassinating, slaughtering, and conquering all his rival kingdoms. And finally, after he kills the last one and murders and God knows how many millions of Chinese people died. He's now unified China into one state. And he's like, now we must all live in peace. Of course, how convenient for your ass, right? I mean, that's Donald Trump. Like, let's all live in peace, except maybe he went straight back to the White House and signed off on a drone strike like 2 hours later. I mean, and we're supposed to, like, you know, you'll see, you know, Democrats and, you know, mainstream liberal media people say, like, oh, it's deplorable. You know, there's no place for political violence. No, there's only place for political violence in this country. I mean, this same administration murdered at least two American citizens and God knows how many, non-American citizens at the hands of ICE over the last year, a year and a half, and made fun of them, smeared them, lied about them, covered up the murders. And I mean, literally, all these people were doing is protesting peacefully American policy. I mean, political violence, that's all we know.
I think the thing, agreed, it's not just political violence internally, but externally also, right? And as you point out, the old days where it seems like protests mattered, or where you got all of these people who would rally around a particular cause, where you get these movements pushing upon the system, where the Nixon administration is like, oh my God, they're coming to get us. That is not there anymore. I mean, it just seems like it's ineffectual to make change. Maybe they look at it as, you know, we don't believe in your threats. Maybe it's that we don't believe that Americans are going to get out and get aggressive with their government in order to make changes. Maybe it's that. But it's, you know, when it puts me in mind of a relationship where the wife of a husband just complains but never does anything, in which case the other just realizes, oh, they're bluffing. Maybe it's that. But they don't seem to respond. And to be honest, I don't remember a large protest that was sustained short of the Iraq War. Maybe going back to the Vietnam War.
That one wasn't even sustained. I mean, the truth is, with the Iraq War, the protests basically came to an end after the invasion and the occupation began. And there were only, like, I don't know, maybe half a dozen protests leading up to the war of any note.
So what is the government thinking in this case of, like,
they're not worried about us. They're not scared of us at all.
Exactly. And that's the issue. That's the issue, right? It's one thing, meaning there needs to be leverage. I am a firm believer that leverage is the thing that makes changes, not complaining, not asking for it or anything like this. And lone gunmen is not enough.
So this is the hard part, right? Like, I think I would like Cole Thomas Allen. I think I would enjoy his company. I think I would relate to him more. If it's the beer question, Gore versus Bush, I'd rather have a beer with Cole Allen than Donald Trump. Much rather, assuming that Donald Trump was going to have a beer. I mean, that's fucked up too, right? I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
But that's environmental. That's not like, it's not like you woke up in the morning and said, I want somebody to knock off the president, right? Under, like, meaning in an ideal system.
I want him to be impeached, is what I want. I want him to be removed. I want to live in a country where Republican members of the House of Representatives and in the Senate get together one morning and they're like, look, guys, this is going to hurt our party, but we've got to take out the trash here. This is fucked up. You know, we have to let JD drive the car and hope for the best. Right. That's literally the country I want to live in. And I'd like to think that if I were a Republican member of Congress, I don't know how that would ever happen, but if I were, that's the conclusion I would come to. It'd just be like, look, this was a president who found it necessary a few days ago to issue a formal declaration that he did not plan to drop a nuclear bomb on Iran.
Right.
I mean, why? Because me and lots of other people thought he's that fucking crazy. If the American people think that their president is that fucking crazy, that he's a Greg Stilson in the Dead Zone character who wakes up in the middle of the night and wants to end the world, he's got to go.
Yeah, agreed. And you know what it is? Our system is based on bad, good faith, which shouldn't be extended.
Right? No.
Like, even the way that you point out, like the 25th Amendment, where you can take out the president. Okay, but that requires this notion that the vice president is working in the larger interests of America, which I don't buy that. And the same thing with Congress, right? It's assumed that Congress would be working in the best interests of America. Okay, maybe that was true in the Nixon era, where Republicans were like, hey, Tricky, you're not going to make it through this. You're going to be put in the cage.
You know, look, I was alive back then. I remember it and I watched it. Let me just tell you, it's true. They did that, right? In the end. But man, those Republicans, they went out kicking and screaming throughout 1973 and 1974. They defended the shit out of Richard Nixon until it just became untenable. And finally, they came out of their hidey holes and they just, I mean, that's the difference, right? Now there's no sense that even 2, 1, 2, 3 years in, the bullshit, there's no end to it. I think they would never end. Like I said, dog fucking on TV wouldn't matter. It does not matter.
That dog had it coming.
It's like that. That was a Democrat dog. That dog was a slut.
Right.
That, right. Look at the way that dog pranced around with its cute fur.
Yeah, it's like what man can resist this, right? This was a honey trap by the Democrats.
Of course, obviously, this president has betrayed his base, and you would think that they would turn on him, but they hate the Democrats even more than they hate being betrayed. And so, and look, right now, that's just the lay of the land. You and I could have had this exact, and we did have the same exact conversation under Joe Biden. The Democrats hated the Republicans more than they hated the fact that the president was senile. And which, you know, I ranted about all throughout Biden's administration. He was senile before he took the oath of office. But
yeah.
But the point is that, you know, it's not, I want to be clear here. This is not a left versus right criticism. This is a system criticism. So we have a lot of comments, and we owe it to them to get to them. Should we? Shall we?
Yes. Agree. And by the way, I agree with everything that came out of your mouth.
Thank you very much. Paralegal, thanks very much for the donation. $5. I am a MAGA supporter. Okay, well, I do want to hear more about that. Okay, but thank you. Moby Bluth, thanks for the $2. Just want to echo Jamarl that these people are likely sociopaths. I saw this during my time in private equity consulting for the same firm that Netanyahu is at. We shouldn't assume that they are like us. Yeah. I think that's a good, they're not like us. And even if they start out like us, they don't end up like us. Let's see. Okay, this is a request for you, JT, from Wandy. Oh my God, Jamarl needs to post a link or something when his show ends. I don't get notifications and I have to search. So one recommendation is if you subscribe to the show, you should get on YouTube or Rumble, you should get notifications. But anyway, a link is always good.
I put it at the bottom of my channel. To know that they can come here.
Cool. Manchild, I'd never shed a tear for the goober, but could a Trump assassination create a martyr effect that strengthens his base, creates chaos, and destroys any chance of the left making real political gains? I don't think there's any chance of the left making real political gains as it is, but for sure there would be a martyr effect. No question.
Yeah, I mean, the hardcore MAGA supporters will feel some kind of way, I suppose. Kind of like the Charlie Kirk thing where they try to effectively use Charlie Kirk as a lightning rod into political space to go after the left, or specifically go after Democrats in general. Yeah, I mean, that could always be the case, right? For any president that gets killed. I mean, I guess that's kind of my, if I have any twang, it's
Did you hear Trump talk about, like, on 60 Minutes, all the best presidents get assassinated? That's why this is happening to me, because I'm a great president.
Not really.
I'm like, I'm not sure. I don't think William McKinley was that great. Garfield was a wonderful person, actually, but he was only in for a few months and he didn't really have a chance to do anything. JFK always overrated.
You think JFK is overrated?
One day we will go to the moon.
I don't know if I entirely agree. I know they have the dark side of Camelot. Fair enough.
Well, I mean, you know, look, he was squirrely on civil rights.
True.
Yeah, I don't think the Civil Rights Act would have passed under an ongoing Kennedy administration.
You think it required his death in order to push that over the finish line?
Yeah, I think LBJ really required it.
Yeah.
That was LBJ's life work. Maybe Bluth, there was a photo circulating on Reddit of the shooter wearing an IDF shirt. Yeah, I saw that. I didn't know what to make of it. Oh, well, let's talk about that. I saw that and I was like, is that fake? And like nowadays you have to ask yourself that about any image you see, video or audio I know audio is not an image, but you see any image you see online, you're like, is that real? I mean, what role does that play in stuff? You don't even know. So, Jamarl, one of the things I found fascinating was I did a deep dive into domesticated cats and how they're wired one time. So the difference between a domesticated house cat, and they're all house cats are descended from two breeds of wild cat, the Middle Eastern and the Central Asian wild cat. And those cats are unique among all cats in that they have a trip mechanism. Like if they're startled, they take a beat to assess whether there's an actual threat before they bite or claw. Ocelots, tigers, animal cats like that don't do that. They just go straight to bite and claw mode. And that's why cats can be domesticated, because they can live with us, because they don't freak out at every time a truck drives by your house, right? And so I'm thinking now we've become domesticated house cats. We can't react to what we see in the news. We have to sort of take a beat and say, wait, is this real or not? And that, I guess, is probably good. But on the other hand, it means that we're tamping down our emotional responses to things that maybe deserve a more intense emotional response.
I don't think it's good. I mean, let me split this. Yes, you're right. It's good for people to take a beat to assess, right? Mm-hmm. It's bad that they have to do that. And what I mean by that is we are reaching this kind of weird age where truth and reality are very nebulous things. Mm-hmm. It was bad enough from the standpoint of just media, where media will report a story in order as propaganda to get the audience or the public to move in a particular direction that may be against their own self-interest. Now, and you can expect in 10 years with sufficient technology, what's real and what's fake are going to be very difficult to ascertain. And the idea that you can say XYZ took place, like, for example, the Reichstag fire. Let's take that for example. Okay, there was a Reichstag fire. Okay, we're going to blame Poland, and we're going to use that as a pretext to go into the war. Okay, what if you could see the guy said it, and you could see him wearing I Love Poland t-shirt while he is setting it, and all of it's fake? Mm-hmm. And I'm saying you can get to the point now where technology is what's real and what's fake, or what's fake is indistinguishable from what's real, because A, it's being reported to you, and B, as you're looking at it, everything in it will look indistinguishable from reality. That is terrifying. Yeah. And like trying to figure out what's real will be difficult. So even if you take that beat and you're looking at it, the people who are looking at it, it's always going to split. If I have an argument with you about beating your wife, half of the audience is going to be like, Ted beats his wife with no evidence presented, right?
Right.
What does that look like when it is presented to you and it's indistinguishable from real? And even worse, just one more point. 30 years into the future, 40 years into the future, when documentaries are being made, how would they be able to tell what's fake and what's real when they're looking back?
They won't.
It's terrifying.
Because the thing is, there's still stuff that's ancient propaganda that still flies, right? I mean, exactly. There's the anti-Semitic tract, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Right. It's a forgery. It's not real. It's not true. Some people still think the Hitler diaries are real. They're not. They're a forgery. There's that famous video, that movie of Hitler celebrating the fall of France, and he mm-hmm. does a little jig. That's Allied propaganda. They put him on a loop. He just stepped back once to let someone walk by, and they put him on a loop to make him look like he's doing a silly little jig. That pops up in documentaries about the fall of France. The thing is, so back then there wasn't nearly as much, fake news as there is now. It's like, I can't even imagine.
It's terrifying. I mean, it's makes you question reality.
And a lot of people are just going to check out more than have already checked out. A lot of people have checked out of the news because they're disgusted. And now they're going to be like, why fucking bother? It's the reason that I never got into the WWE, because it's fake, right? So it's like, I'm not interested, It's like I stopped following baseball because I realized they're not really... The Cincinnati Reds aren't really from southwestern Ohio. They don't really care about it. And they'll just go work. It's a business. And they'll just go work for someone else. And, half of them are on steroids and the whole thing. It's like, it's fake. Fuck it. I'm out. So people will do that with politics. They really will.
Well, I would argue they already have. I mean, when you get 50% of the people checking out of the elections, that's pretty wild, right? Also, this other thing that's very strange. Like, it's almost like laws haven't caught up. Or how can I say this? We haven't caught up with our technological advancement and what the technology means. Because it's one thing to create something. It's another thing to be like, okay, what does it mean in our society now that this stuff is being created? Technology is a beautiful thing, right? Like this idea of eliminating work, eliminating the need for people to do laborious jobs. I don't want a human being who has the capacity to understand the universe dropping French fries. By the same token, it doesn't seem like we've caught up with it. And some of this stuff is sprinting well beyond our capability to control.
No doubt. This next question, Robbie is part of it. So, Robbie, by the way, do we have an ad by any chance?
We do. You want me to go ahead and throw it up?
Maybe wait, let's do this first, then, you know, you can do it afterwards. So Sean Lewis, thanks for the question. If you could choose anyone alive to be the next president of the United States, who would you choose and why? Would like to hear Robbie's thought too.
For me, it's easy. Tucker Carlson, because he's willing to apologize whenever he's wrong. That is huge. And I think that the guy's honest. I don't know how well that works in DC, but he's my pick.
President Ham Sandwich, because I don't think it's a person issue. I think it's the office issue. Meaning, what does Tucker Carlson, and probably I'm not going after you, I'm just pointing out, what does Tucker Carlson look like in a presidential role when he has a Congress to deal with, when he has a public to deal with, when he has like, I don't think it's the person, I think it's the position. I think part of it is the person, agreed. But the other part of this is the pressures that are put on people in that office. And I don't know how you get around it. I don't know if it's a person thing or an office thing. I think it's an office thing.
I agree. But here's what the president's able to do. He has one thing Congress doesn't have. He has the bully pulpit.
Yes.
So you can get elected. And then you call a press conference. Say, okay, here's what I want to do. And Congress is going to fight me every step of the way. So every single one of you that's sitting on your ever-spreading backsides needs to get on your phones and call your congressman and raise hell, because I'm not here to play games. I'm here to burn the system down, and I need you to be the gasoline. It's easier to hijack a plane than it is to build one.
Agreed.
And so that's what Tucker has.
And the controls are broken, though.
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, no, listen, don't get me wrong. I mean, am I saying that that's a surefire thing? No. But what I'm saying is that if you're able to get someone in who literally cannot be bought because you're already rich, seriously, what are you going to offer Tucker Carlson more money? That's the last thing that the man needs. And I think he legitimately, honestly cares about the American people, because he's the only one, even on Fox News, who is going out actually addressing real issues. Because one thing that Tucker Carlson does, and this is pretty wild, he's a sportsman. He goes all these places to go hunting and fishing and stuff. So he sees these small towns in the middle of America that are literally being decimated. He sees the hopelessness. He's there. He sees it. I mean, JT, if you came here to Kalispell exists right now because it's a tourist trap. That's it. There's some reason that is here. The next town over, Columbia Falls, the aluminum plant closes. All the jobs are outsourced to China. The town is dying.
Yeah.
It is literally dying. Our governor does not care. Our congressmen do not care. Our state, our senators don't. No one gives a single solitary flying fuck whatsoever. And you can repeat that same story to small town, to small town, to small town, all over the entire country, and yes, Nobody cares. That's why Trump got elected. Listen to me on this. Trump got elected because he says, I hear you. He get elected because he says, I can fix it. He made that claim. But his big thing is that he said, I hear what it is you're saying. I care about what you're saying.
And by the way, parenthetically, that's why he's losing approval now, because no people no longer think he hears them.
Well, right. He says he doesn't. I mean, think about this. Ben Shapiro, famously on a clip last year, said, if you cannot afford to live in the town that you were born, then you should just pack up and leave, because you don't have any right to be there. So you should go and be a migrant. It doesn't matter if your great-great-grandparents built that place. It doesn't matter that your family's buried there. You just need to pack up and just go. Because, frankly, you're too inept, you're too stupid, you don't deserve the legacy that was left to you. Meanwhile, this same guy is the one that says Israel needs to exist, and we have to protect it because it's for God's chosen people, even though by themselves they can't afford to stay there or protect or to defend it. Trump is exactly the same thing. And that's what sets Tucker Carlson apart from everybody else, but luggage and all. He is the only person in the public space with a big stage that will look in the eye and say, I was wrong. Please forgive me.
I mean, I hate to be snotty, and this is paraphrases something that Trump said about John McCain liking prisoners who, pilots who don't get captured. But I kind of prefer my political figures to be those who were right from the beginning. And I mean, you know, there were a lot of, there were millions, tens of millions of Americans who were against invading Iraq. Yeah. And Tucker Carlson was a high profile example of someone who relentlessly was in favor of it. I agree with you. You know, I grew up Catholic. Penance is the most, is the defining sacrament of Catholicism. And I think it's really important to apologize when you've fucked up. Yeah. We all fuck up. I fuck up. But I mean, I do think, and, you know, I don't trust someone whose judgment would lead them to make such a colossal mistake, because we all had the information needed to make the correct call at the time in 2002, 2003. And Tucker Carlson, for whatever reason, his brain failed him, or he was full of shit and being paid to lie. I don't know which it is.
Well, he came out and said, because one of his interviewers, one of his people on the shows, I don't remember which one it was, asked him that very same question. Say, why did you do this? He said a couple of reasons. He says, one, the paycheck was good, and I was drunk and stoned all the time.
That sucks.
I mean,
yeah, that's a horrible excuse.
Yeah, well, he wasn't making an excuse. He's being honest. He's, I mean,
I appreciate that too. I do.
I mean, one of the things that,
but it still sucks, because many of us were not drunk and stoned, and maybe many of us who were drunk and stoned still didn't make that.
Right, still knew it was wrong, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. But now for the two of you, I gave y'all my answer. JT, mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of went with ham sandwich, because that's not an answer.
I know this
is there anyone else that y'all can say that you think would be a better choice than someone who is able to get up and humiliate himself publicly? Because that's what an apology is.
Yeah, that's true.
I was wrong.
Although I don't view it as a sign of weakness at all. Yeah, I view it as a sign of strength.
Well, yeah. A lot of people do, though. Like Americans, we're the exceptional nation.
You should never apologize.
We never apologize. Yeah. We never ask for forgiveness. There's nothing. You cannot be a Christian without first admitting, I screwed up. I'm a sinner. And the first thing you do is that you apologize to God and ask him to save you. The second thing that you do is that if you've wronged somebody, you got a person face to face and say, I'm sorry, I wronged you.
The problem Please is forgive we're a churlish people, us Americans.
Oh, very much so.
And I remember, like, the only time I ever apologized for over a cartoon, man, that was a mistake. Never should have. I got eaten alive. It's like I lost a lot of business as a result. If I had just held firm and never rolled Donald Trump style and never apologized, it would have been better. I hate that. I still think I was right to apologize, but it was a bad move tactically.
I know, but the mistake that you made, though, didn't cost the death of over a million people. Tucker's did. No.
Well, that's true.
So, and all things in scale, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I hate to say it. I'm going to go with, ham sandwich also. Because, look, here's you got a picture. President Robbie West walks into the Oval Office on January 20th, mm-hmm. and they show you around. They show you with a Resolute desk. And then they're like, Mr. President, we have an urgent meeting right now in the Situation Room. Crisis in Mozambique. We need you to come downstairs. And then it's like you're surrounded by dudes with lettuce, as they call it in the military, mm-hmm. right? Like on their uniforms and stars and, you know, big macho looking dudes. And they're like, you know, like if, and they're threatening you, basically. If you don't do this, you'll look weak. If we don't kill these people, you'll look weak. The United States will look weak. Our national security interests are at stake. We will not respect you. We will not follow your orders in the future. Our allies will think that will say that you're weak. You have to act decisively, boldly, violently.
Do you want to know what President Robbie West would do? And I mean this sincerely, because I've thought about this a lot. Ted, me and you've talked about this. Mm-hmm. If someone came into the Oval Office and said, President West, I need you to come and, like Jess said, let's just use Mozambique. I would point to a map of the United States on the wall and say, show me where Mozambique is on this map. Well, Mr. President, it's not there. It's in Africa. I said, that's not my problem. I don't care. My problem is right here. These 50 states, that's my problem.
Okay.
And you work for me.
But countries have missiles. Countries, I mean, I agree with you fundamentally. But, you know, it's like, but we have security interests. We have.
So what?
No, I mean, but the point is we can go down this rabbit hole, and we do have a couple more topics to talk about if we want to get to them. I mean, I do think this is interesting. I don't know that one person, even as powerful a person as the president of the United States with the bully pulpit, as you mentioned, can really change anything of note. They all end up getting swallowed by the Borg. They all do.
It would depend on the American people, because here's the thing, and we'll go away because I know we got to go. People think that the presidency is more important than it actually is. In a lot of ways, it's kind of a figurehead, because you do the will of the blob, because the blob can outlast you. Mm-hmm. You've got to have Congress. And the only way that you get Congress is by burning down the system. That's why I voted for Trump. You cannot negotiate with the cancer. You can't negotiate with it. You can't ask it nicely to stop growing before it kills you. You have to cut it out and you have to kill it. Our government is a cancer. You have to cut it out. You have to kill it.
Agreed.
You have to extract
it. The question is how to do that.
By pissing off the American people and getting them.
I think you have to overthrow the whole thing.
Well, there's two ways that you can do it. Either one is that you can do it internally, which is what Hitler did. Or you can roll the dice and you can try to have a violent revolution, in which case maybe it'll work after 30 years and a million people dying. Let's try the overthrow first from within. If that doesn't work, then no, the cartridge box is always an option. But it should be the last one.
Well, that's the argument.
Mechanical. I mean, meaning I think empires go up to the point where they can't go anymore. And I think a population like the U.S., it would have to get to the point where it is so beleaguered and strained that changing things standing still takes more energy than changing it. Meaning, I think imperial overreach will have feedback consequences that would affect how we engage. Sounds cynical, but I don't see the American public getting up in Adam like talking about. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I don't know who would go through the gauntlet of political intrigue to get to the level of the president and can withstand the forces that are going to be pushed against them when that person gets in office. I think it will be hard. I think people like you, Robbie, get weeded out before you ever even get to the primaries.
Oh, I would get assassinated.
Well, and I guarantee that ultimately is what would happen.
Oh, for sure. Listen, I mean, I would love nothing more than to run for Congress here in Montana against Ryan Zinke. The man's a tyrant. That's a complete and total waste of carbon. If there was ever a perfect example of a failed abortion, it's Ryan Zinke. All right. That being said, even if I was able to raise $1 million to take a seat here in Western Montana, think about that for a second.
Oh, that's not enough.
Oh, I know.
If I ever got to
Congress, they would give my life a colonoscopy, try everything they can to try to destroy me. If that couldn't work, then what they would do is they wouldn't put me into a committee. If that didn't work, I'd have a tractor fall on me like traffic cam did. I mean, I understand what the process is. People like me don't have a future in politics, but someone like, say, John D. Cockefeller over there on the Rumble chat is very eloquent, much smarter than I am. Do it. I tell you,
there will be questions about his name, though.
The school board election is the most important election, though, in your county. Run for your school boards. Take those over first. And the way that you eat an elephant is one bite at a time. Don't think global. Don't think national. Think local.
Guys, let's go ahead and okay. So let's have that ad, Robbie, and let's move on. Let's ask. There's a few more questions we have to get to. Let's see.
Oh, they're not available. We lost it. It's all good.
Oh, we lost it. Okay. All right. Okay. So maybe Bloop. I just want to echo. Okay, we talked about that. Notice how the media never talks about civilian casualties of our war crimes. We've been desensitized to our violence to no end. Hear, hear.
Agreed. Hey, you can look at Reuters this morning. Or it's either Reuters or the AP talking about the Western-backed putsch attempt in Mali. Mm-hmm. And the way they talk about it is kind of like opposition forces raid Mali in an attempted coup. It's like, dude, you're pushing terrorists to try to overthrow a government that you lost. Talking about Mali. It's part of Sahel states now with, you know, Ibrahim Traoré in Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali as a unit. It's agree. My point is I agree.
It is like spreading like a cancer. All right. Yeah. Let's talk about the royal visit. I don't need a lot of time on this. I don't know about you, JT. I guess it's like if I were King Charles and I was fighting cancer, probably like hanging out with someone as toxic and annoying as Donald Trump would probably not be on the top of my list of personal priorities. But interestingly, Prime Minister Keir Starmer wanted this visit to take place and wanted to shore up the relationship across the pond, as they say. Keir Starmer is like looking a little bit cucked here, isn't he? I mean, Trump treats him like dog shit. And then instead of sort of distancing himself and giving him the cold shoulder, he's like, I'll send the king and queen over to suck your dick.
Wow, that's a hell of a Passover tip. That's a hell of a Passover. It's like, all right, Jamal, what is the problem we have to do?
Well, it's deprogrammed, you know.
Right? I mean, when you get Rudy calling Trump daddy, and you're like one grown man calling another grown man daddy, is pretty astonishing. But that tells you the dynamics of the relationship. And this is the UK, supposedly, we have a special relationship with the UK in this case. Yeah, the special relationship from, as you point out, one man's penis to another man's mouth, which seems to be the relationship between the two. Now, in all seriousness, obviously Britain is having difficulties, right? I mean, the blockade is having a serious effect on Europe and the cost of energy in Europe. We don't entirely see it in the U.S. because the U.S. is trying to manipulate markets.
Not yet.
But gas is going up, and it's only so much market manipulation you can do by claiming Iran is offered a deal and then the U.S. not saying anything. We are close to a deal, et cetera. My point is the U.K., whether it's from the standpoint of the Ukraine war or whether it's from the standpoint of the blockade, is being affected by U.S. policy. And with this disassociation with the European Union, obviously they are in need of some kind of trade deal with the United States in order to shore up their economic, let's say the economic center. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they are, you know, the moment that you said we're going to uncouple from Europe, you got to couple to somebody. You're just a tiny little island, right? And with the U.S., that special relationship is going to come in handy even more so. And, yeah, obviously the U.K. is a junior partner in that relationship. Yeah, he's, if you're calling it cucked, I will go with the same phraseology. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. God, I think maybe thanks for the donation. Guys, to be honest, how much do people actually care about the scandals of these politicians? E.g., did anyone care about Clinton and Lewinsky, or was it just a media plot? I'm a woman, and Monica didn't bother me. Well,
in the old days, I think they did.
People cared about the Monica Lewinsky thing at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like we've gotten used to them.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, it's true. I mean, can you imagine if Richard Nixon came back and it's like, oh, you know, so they basically they were going to impeach me because I tapped 120 phones. And, you know, Edward Snowden will be like, well, now we tap all of them, right? Like in the world. It's like, I mean, the scale, I mean, it's breathtaking. Think about Spiro T. Agnew, right? Vice President mm-hmm. under Nixon, forced to resign because as governor of Maryland, he accepted a $10,000 bribe from the milk producers lobby. That's how he resigned from the vice president. Like, can you imagine now? That's like 5 seconds in Donald Trump's grifts. Yeah. I mean, he's literally making billions of dollars. He's grifting his own assassination attempt on the ballroom. It's crazy. I think we were on the same page there. Flanderina, yeah. JT and Ted, I wish you'd named an actual person. Does that mean you think the system is so absolutely broken that there is no one?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's why I don't have a name. Like, even if I said Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders is too weak to even run a decent race against another maniac, right? Like, I don't, and even if he was in office, I think he would be milk toast at best. Like, meaning, I think the system corrals. I think even the process of getting into that particular position damages the individual or requires a certain individual to take that role in order to go through that gauntlet to get to that particular position. I mean, you could say FDR. I thought FDR was great. But that's my own bias from a historical context. Who knows what that looks like in today's modern times? I don't have a person. The issue is the system. This needs to be demolished. And whether this climactic, whether the Iran war is the climactic end, the last gasp of a dying empire. Who knows? I hope that's the case. It's not to our best interest. Do you really believe spending $1.5 trillion on military is in the best interest of the American public? Honestly not, with $37 trillion
in debt. Fuck no.
Yeah.
Not as long as a single American is suffering. Seriously. Not as long as a single American is even slightly mildly worried about one bill not being able to get paid. I do not want to waste that money on defense.
Agreed. I mean, like $37 trillion there, $10 trillion of that was the Iraq War and Afghanistan War. And $2 trillion a year, like under the Biden administration, the Trump administration, et cetera, et cetera. This stuff is outrageous. It's not like it's coming to us.
No, it sure fucking isn't. We have a few minutes. Changes afoot and perhaps in Israel, but not big change. Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid, who are both opposition figures on the center right, there really kind of is no liberal politics in Israel anymore. They're going to merge their two parties, and they're going to try, and there's going to be elections later this year, and they're going to try to throw out Netanyahu. The only time Netanyahu has been out in about a quarter of a century as prime minister was when something like this happened earlier. And of course, you know, you can look at Hungary and see the effect of, you know, sort of getting together with the opposition and unifying behind an opposition candidate. Question, is that likely to succeed? And then B, if so, would that have any meaningful impact on Israel's behavior in Lebanon and so on?
No. The answer is no. Well, will it succeed? Maybe. Would it affect policy? Probably not. I mean,
the fiction here is that, like, oh, Netanyahu's the bad guy. If we get rid of him, everything will be fine.
Yeah, the issue is the colony. It's not, you know, it's like, yeah, Netanyahu's a bad guy. True. He's a psychopath. True. Putting in two other psychopaths or putting in another party led by a psychopath is not entirely going to change Israeli policy. Will they pull back in some respects, maybe, in order to show some difference? But the Israeli population firmly agrees with Netanyahu's policy. Let's be honest. So it's not the leader. It's the entirety of the entity itself. It's the existence of the entity that's the problem. At least that's my point of view.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. I mean, I think Israel is kind of a lost cause because, you know, it's kind of like what's going on in you're looking at the United States from the outside. If you had a restive population with 30 million protesters in the streets of American cities every day, Americans could credibly look at the world in the face and say, look, listen, we don't like our country and what it's doing. But we can't do that. And Israel's in the same exact position. You know, they're on board. They're complicit, you know, because and the polls show that. And even when there was opposition to Netanyahu, it was just over like, oh, you're not bombing Gaza enough, or you're not doing enough to get our hostages back. It wasn't about the genocide.
Exactly. Yeah. They were firmly to the tune of like 80-90% the population agreed with government policy.
So we have this logistical issue, JT, where I need to hit a button. Oh. And then I when I do that, I go silent as I go into TMI show with Manila Jan. So I'm going to need you to close out the show. But before we do, let's end with a very nice positive comment from the real Tim Bott. You guys are kicking ass since John left. Jamarl, I'm sorry I haven't made time to welcome you. You're a perfect fit and a pleasure to listen to each day. Couldn't agree more. Have a fantastic day, guys.
I appreciate that. All right, we are closing. This is Deprogrammed with Ted Raw, Jamarl Thomas. We will see you bright and early. In fact, we have Q&A this evening at 12 o'clock. We will be there, so definitely check us out if you have any questions that you want to ask Ted and I. This is Jamarl Thomas, Ted Raw, Deprogram, Robbie, signing off. You guys have a fantastic day. We'll see you at 12. All right.